The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with the assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, you're listening to Fresh FM. I'm Chrissy Small, and I have loop pedal artist Miharangi Waitahi on the line from up north. And as some of you will remember, Miharangi was on New Zealand Has Got Talent. And she blew the judges away. She blew a lot of us away, actually. So it's a real delight to have her on the line.
Kia ora, Auntie. I'm calling you Auntie because you're like,
I know,
one of my mum's oldest friends. So.
Yeah, and what a gorgeous mum you have too. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
Done many shows with your darling mother.
Yes. I've been thinking a lot how I would love to actually spend some time with you and obviously others from that period of time and just really learn more about, you know, what was your guys' experiences back then? Like, that would be my interview. I'll interview you. How's that?
All I can say is there was lots of laughter. Okay. Yeah. Oh, look, now, tell me, what are you up to?
At the moment, so obviously I was doing music, but now I'm actually the communications and coordinator lead for Pirungia Restoration Society. So I'm currently working for our mountain, our maunga, Mount Pirungia, up here in, just outside of Hamilton, outside of Kirikiriroa. And yeah, it's my love, it's my passion. Nature is my first love. It's always been part of my spiritual guidance. So I'm so grateful to I'm basically doing that. This year I made a conscious decision to stop touring, and then that job fell into my lap, and it's great. So I get to organize volunteers to do the baiting and the trapping and reintroducing species, our taonga species and stuff. So it's really cool.
How exciting. So it's not only a nature journey, it's sort of a bit spiritual there, Mihi.
Well, absolutely. So it was interesting. I'm not just a tree hugger. I really believe in the atua. So in Te Ao Māori, you know, the atua of Tāne Mahuta, Tangaroa, Tāwhiri Mati, all the gods of the environment.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is the gods of the environment have gifted everything to us in our bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Tāwhiri Mati gives us our breath. Ruaumoko gives us our adrenaline. There's all sorts of things that the different gods have given us. And so that's been my belief. And as a child growing up, I grew up in the bush. So that's a real deep experience for me. Like, I've only ever really had these really deep experiences of spirituality with nature. And so anyway, when I landed in this area, and you listeners might think I'm kooky, but I remember I went out to the mountain here, and I went to the bush, and there's a ancient kahikatea tree that's about 800 years old that's in that bush, and I was doing these karakia, doing some prayers and stuff, and then I just asked the tree, I just said, you know, what can I do, and this was in a state of meditation, what can I do to support you, what can I do to protect you, what can I do to actually share the vibrational energy that's in that forest to the rest of the world, because that's what music is about, right?
Sure.
Sharing vibrations. So I was like, okay, I'm being really, the Modi is filling up in me, I'm getting nourished by this. What can I give back to protect this and share this globally or share this locally? And within that month, I got the job of protecting the mountain. So I'm just like, you know, this stuff works. It works. It really does.
It does. You know, I truly believe in the power of attraction, and I believe that when you set your mind to something, you set off a wave. And
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it's the belief that's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if your belief is out of alignment, you know, like, say, for example, if I said to myself, oh, I want $1 million, but deep down my belief system is money is evil, you're not going to get it right.
No.
So it's like it has to align with your belief system. If it doesn't align with your belief system, no matter what you try and manifest, it's not going to come.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's like, you know, you're just contradicting yourself the whole time. So, yeah, exactly. And, you know, so this is a real journey for you. And did you imagine that you would be doing this a year or so ago?
Well, no, not at all. You know, like I think none of us, I don't think anyone even listening would expect us to be where we are today with the government that we currently have. Mm. None of us expected that we would go through COVID. None of us expected that we would, you know, be experiencing AI like we are. No one predicted any of this. Mm. So, no, I definitely didn't predict the position that I'm in now. My predicament was, oh, I'm going to continue touring, doing music for the rest of my life, you know.
Yeah. You've been a great ambassador for Indigenous you know, music. You've had quite a bit of involvement with other nations and their Indigenous people, you know, and you've been a real ambassador for this country.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's really interesting because I got blackbanned by the New Zealand music industry and the media. I'm okay to talk about it. I do a big stuff to that because, you know, like I know that I've done a lot internationally and the reason why I did a lot internationally was because of one of the aunties in Australia when I was living there, Auntie Kitty Jews, bless her beautiful soul. She's such a beautiful elder. And she taught me te karanga when I was really young, when I was first moved to Australia. And so I started incorporating karanga and te reo Māori in my performances when I started looping back in, I think, 2001. I started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And She had said to me, which was really super interesting, and it changed the pathway of my life completely. She said to me, if you're going to karanga when you do your performances, it's not a performance. You're actually going to be doing it for real, right? So this is the whole thing, which is what, you know, which is what it was all about for me. And she said to me, you're not allowed to do a karanga unless you speak to the local Indigenous people first and you get their permission to do a ritual of your culture on their land. Now, that, when she told me that, that just changed my life utterly. So what happened for I don't know, 20 plus years that I'd been doing music for and doing these international touring, I had it in my contract that I would not perform unless I met with the local Indigenous people. I could not tell you how many tribes I've met around the world because of it. You know, like this is, and what would happen is I go to a place and you know, like for example, when we went to the Arctic and we met with the local Inuit, they had a festival there.
Mm-hmm.
And we got off, as soon as we got the plane, they took us to meet with the local Indigenous Inuit elders, and there was like probably about 20 elders. Like, I'm talking old elders. Like, these are people, like some of them I'm sure were in their hundreds. Like, they were super, like, great grandmas. And wow. It was such an incredible, profound experience to be welcomed by them. And what I'd do is I would sit with them, and not only would we do a cultural exchange, but I'd ask them, you know, what is it that's going on for your people? What do you need? How can I support you? And a lot of times I would say to them, you know, you're welcome to come up on stage before I perform, and I can give you time and space during my performance for you to come and whatever you want to present, you know, whether it was talking about the local mining or talking about the whatever it is that they needed to say publicly. Mm. And because of that, just develop these really powerful moments in time where culturally we came together and supported one another, but also shared in a way publicly where the local people got to experience that kotahitanga between Indigenous cultures, which is really beautiful, you know? Yeah. Really, really beautiful.
Absolutely. And, you know, so, yeah, and such a good connection for you as well, you know, and for them, you know.
Yeah, but I think also out of that has come not just my experience, but I think at that time, you know, like Indigenous cultures at that time from around, I think around about, you know, the early 2000s, there's this real deep celebration globally of Indigenous culture. I mean, it's more so now with TikTok and things like that. But then at the same time, there's now, because of, you know, social media algorithms and, you know, these big corporations being able to control the algorithm, there's these tools caused for division. And that division, unfortunately, the people who are normally our allies are also, you know, questioning like our position of equality. And it's just like, holy crap, you know, like you guys, we're still in these positions of suppression. And now, especially with the government that we have now, it's even more so. It's impossible for me to get funded now to go touring. Not only am I a female artist, but I'm an Indigenous artist and I'm a musician. So the art and culture are the first things to go when you know the country's in a state of crisis and these leaders that we have just go, okay, let's cut funding with the arts, let's cut funding with culture. But to do so and, you know, support these the mineral corporations and things like that, to give them to bring the money, it's just like, well, you know, it's really interesting. We don't necessarily need what they believe we need. Yeah. It's like that's not what we need. We actually need to create local jobs. We need to create local, you know, we need to change what it is that is the preferences of our communities, and what does that look like instead of, you know, acting out with these global corporations who are just going to be you know, ruining the very fabric, not just of our environment, but of our societies, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this big gold mine they're looking down at Otago, you know, two grams of gold for every 21 ton of rock that they're going to crush, and the arsenic that's going to be left in big ponds, just settling ponds that, you know, if there's a major earthquake shift, will end up in aquifers. Yeah. And, you know, it's just going to totally destroy and, you know, financially, New Zealand gets very little from that. And, you know, so right. Why are we allowing this sort of thing to even be considered, you know?
Absolutely, and that's the exact reason why they're bringing out this, you know, the conservation this conservation bill and trying to change that and put the power into just one person, into, you know, giving the full power to the Minister of Conservation. And I'm gonna say it, but Tama Pōtaka has never had a career. Never ever had a career in conservation and restoration and environmentalism. He's never been an ecologist. He's never studied the environment. That's not been his profile. And it's like, how can we have this person in such a powerful position, taking and shifting power from community organizations, from DOC, from Mana Whenua, from, you know, because ultimately it gives him power. And my thought is this, so my thinking is this, I actually believe that he believes the script that they're writing for him. Mm. I actually believe that he believes the script that these corporations are writing for him. And then as soon as, if this bill ever went through, it's not going to. There's no way. The country's in an uproar. If it went through, they'd just change the minister. That's all they'd need to do is change the Minister of Conservation. Oh, no, let's get this Māori boy out of the way and let's put in somebody who represents the corporations, and then, boom, they'll be able to go ahead with all of this mining and stuff from the the surveys that they've done and what they've found with all this gold and stuff. So
No, that's okay. We have this situation with this government at the moment where we seem to have lobbyists controlling the narrative. You know, do you think that we need to change the laws around lobbying?
That's a hard question, isn't it?
Yeah. If we could change the laws around it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if anything, you know, there's so many laws in this country that are so archaic that are, you know, that support these corporations. There's so many laws that really need to change, and most definitely one of them. Absolutely.
It's interesting to find that Z Energy and Fonterra have written a law which basically this government's passing as their own, almost pretty much word for word. And of course the secrecy behind the documents that were presented to the Prime Minister's office, there was no deliberate paper trail. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, is this good practice? Because to me, it gives the complete perception of corruption.
Oh, absolutely. And it's backdoor politics and it's, you know, white collar activities. That's what it is. It's just ongoing. Having said that, it's like, well, that's the system that we're using. Mm. You know, the system itself that we're using is designed and set up to protect big power, you know?
Yeah.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what's in power. So, you know, I'm going to say it. I'm voting Greens, man. I'm done with all these political parties. To me, the Greens represent the people. And yeah.
Isn't Tania Waikato just amazing?
Oh, she's a bit of a legend, hey? I really enjoy... I mean, I'm on her thread daily, just to make myself feel like, oh, there's some hope, you know. There's this lawyer who's representing our voices, and I think she's a bit of a legend. And, yeah, she's... I really wish her well, and I think she's representing the voices of those of us who... I could go on about her.
Yeah. Yeah, she's putting a voice for the voiceless, isn't she? She's a voice for the voiceless.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We do.
I was just going to say, I don't think she just represents the voice of the voiceless. I really think that she actually represents the hearts and the minds of the people, you know. And the people do have a voice, but, you know, we're dealing with a government that's trying so hard to suppress all of our voices. It's not going to happen. Our country will be in an uproar, you know. It already is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I can feel that you're so passionate. Is there going to be a song about this?
Well, interestingly enough, as artists, it's really hard for us. I mean, I find the music industry in one of the most extremely challenging places. Mm. You know, not the musicians, but the industry itself. And when we're talking about industry, I'm talking about like Spotify, I'm talking about AI apps, I'm talking about all of these things that are designed. You know, I've got friends and cousins who are not musicians, and these are people I know, who are doing songs and videos using AI and are releasing them themselves. And they're becoming popular, but yet if you were to ask them to do a live performance, they would never be able to do it. You know, I think this is the thing. It's like I saw a friend the other day, and she had created, you know, she's a beautiful singer, but she's not, you know, she's not a professional singer, and she created this AI song. And I noticed how incredibly empowering it was for her, how incredibly healing it was for her to put something into AI and then have it come back as a song for her. And she's really, really passionate about that. It's certainly not something that I want to take away from somebody. However, what is the impact of that on all of us as artists and musicians? You know, there's great AI tools that I know I can use to help me write my songs, but songwriting is actually, it's the process, and it's the actual human process of expressing your feelings and human expression. It's not the expression of a computer. It's not the expression of an app. You know, it's like, how can we really truly, and it's interesting watching all of this stuff taking away from the arts, and seeing as well online, you know, Meta has got huge amounts of publicity promoting, you know, creating AI apps and taking artists like Michael Jackson or whoever and creating memes and stuff with these people have not ever given permission for their faces or their music to be used. It, you know, it's just wrong.
It is
so wrong, and there's no regulation for it, and it's already the horse is bolted through the gate.
Yep. The horse is bolted.
Yeah, totally.
And it doesn't seem to be much of a willingness within governments to be doing anything about it.
No, absolutely not. But there's also not a willingness amongst the general public either.
Right.
Because it does benefit the general public. You know, like, it's like Spotify benefits the general public, but it doesn't benefit the artist.
Yeah.
So if I am a person who has no money and I want to have a playlist, of course I'm going to have Spotify, you know, of course. And so therefore, it still benefits the general public, but it doesn't benefit the artist. It's like, how do we reconcile that?
Yeah. Well, I think there has to be legislation across the board where these companies have to pay a fair whack to the artists that they're using their material. There has to be. If the governments don't find a willingness to support the arts, we're going to completely lose big time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, like, I remember when Spotify first came out, you know, it was in the middle of the peak of my touring career, and at concerts I would sell anything between 300 to 700 CDs.
Mm.
Multiply that by $35 a CD. And me as the artist, I was able to tour and support my art and invest in my own publicity, invest in, you know, that I could remain an independent artist fully, supported by my music being sold and owned by me. Now, you know, as soon as Spotify came out, now it's, what is it, 25,000 listens to get, sorry, is that right? 25,000 listens to get the equivalent of the sale of one CD.
Good God.
That's crazy.
That's, you know, that's theft. That's actually theft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I took my music off Spotify years ago because of it.
Yeah,
it's on Bandcamp.
Bandcamp, yeah.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So people get along to Bandcamp and support Mahurangi, because you know, support our artists on those platforms where you know that you know they're going to get some proper, you know, support.
I think it's really interesting, even though I think one of the biggest things that we're going to come up against really soon is people will want to experience what's real, and live performances will come back. I think once we go through this phase of, like, you know, being caught up in the world of
fake,
you know, fake this and I think you know, live performance is where it's going to be at for future artists regardless, because people will still want to feel something real, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I hope you're right. I really hope you're right, otherwise, you know, we might end up with robots doing shows.
You know, I think we will end up with that. I think that will actually be an outcome. But there'll also still be the other side of that where people will just go, I want that real performance. I want to feel connected to the spirit of a person. You can't connect to the spirit of a robot.
No. it might drive people underground to do real life performance. It's this really dystopian kind of future, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like anything, there's two sides of everything. So I'm looking forward to the opposing side.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, love, I really am so pleased we got to catch up and connect and find out what you're up to. And hopefully, in the not too distant future, we'll see you back down here to do a live performance, you know? You're very loved, and your music is appreciated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm so caught in my own little bubble. I just don't feel that anymore. I'm just like, I'm now working for the mountain. But if anyone wants to listen to anything that I've done recently, probably the most recent thing that I've done that is worth what I believe sharing is what I did with John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin and Playing for Change. The song that I did, When the Levee Breaks, is also a documentary that I worked alongside Sir David Attenborough with.
Oh, fantastic.
And no one in the country knows about it because I was blackburned from the industry. I don't know if you knew that, Auntie. That's what happened. So because I was in Wellington protesting, because my father committed suicide in lockdown, so I went and protested in Wellington, and then we released the song that we did. It's got like 20 million views online and stuff, but you talk to anyone here, and no one knows about it. We did a version of When the Levee Breaks. It's with John Paul Jones, other Indigenous artists from around the world, and the documentary that it goes with was for the United Nations, and I worked with Sir David Attenborough. So
wow.
It's a really big deal.
Yeah.
I just had to say that to your audience.
No, that's great. And what a hero he is. Just 100 years old now, you know. Let's hope he gets another 100, you know. He won't, but, you know. We need more David Attenboroughs in the world, Mihi.
Definitely. He's a legend.
Absolutely. Legend. Yeah. And look, you know, the thing is, COVID was such a divisive thing, but it was global. It wasn't just here. It was global. And, you know, I think keeping everything in perspective, you know, we just have to move on from it now. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, the industry actually wakes up and goes, oh, it's time to move on. You know, life's too short.
Oh, you know, I think the industry has. I think if anything, for me, there's just so many more factors that come into play that impacted me from that experience. That, you know, I've never been a person who's been a music industry person, even though I grew up in the music industry. But I'm certainly, you know, there for my audience, and I'm there to, you know, share my experiences and my own growth and my own personal, you know, passions with audiences. But it's just done differently now, you know?
Yeah. All right, my darling, that's our half hour up. So, gosh, it's gone quick. We should do this again very soon. I want to find out more about your mountain.
Yes, and I want to know more stories about my mum.
Yeah. All right, sweetheart. Look, thank you so much for joining us on Fresh FM today, and lots of love to you too. Ka kite, and we'll hear from you soon.
Okay, ka kite.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.co.nz, for our contact details.